All About Networks.
Introduction. Now that we understand how a computer network allows devices to share information and complete endless tasks, it's time to discuss network security and how, through the process of understanding an application, it can be successfully achieved. At the most basic level, this effort involves the use of both software and hardware to safeguard the usability and integrity of a network and its precious data. It's about two things: access and protection. Because we trust our networks to carry and distribute a mind-boggling amount of valuable personal information, this virtual landscape is an ideal place for cybercriminals to hang out in search of their next big score. A busy network like the Internet is not so different from the bustling streets of New York City. The amount of sheer traffic, movement, and congestion it contains makes staying safe that much harder. But just remember, whether you are roaming around a real-life urban metropolis or a virtual public network, security is entirely achievable. You just need to learn the tricks of the trade. Network devices and media. Just when you thought you knew all there was to know about networks, there's more. We need to spend some time thinking about the actual pathways or channels through which an electric signal moves between devices, otherwise known as network or transmission media. And before the issue of safety can even be raised, we must understand the different types and how they contribute to the effort of cybersecurity. Every transmission medium needs a specialized, compatible network, and this network functions on the first layer of the OSI model. While it would be convenient to build a network with only one medium, it would not be practical for big corporations or other large user bases who demand a combination of media types to function properly. Here are the main categories of network media. Cable. Cable is the hardware that is used in the physical layer of a network. It includes different kinds, all of which have advantages and disadvantages in terms of security and ease of use. Made from ordinary copper wire, twisted pair cable is used to connect home and business computers to the telephone company. When two insulated wires are twisted around each other in a way that reduces and cancels out electromagnetic induction, they create a circuit that can transmit data. They can also prevent crosstalk, or the unwanted transfer of signals between communication channels. This disturbance to the transmission is caused by electromagnetic interference, or noise, and can happen in micro units of computers, audio equipment, and network circuits. Twisting the wires enhances this cancellation effect and allows designers and users to shield their own wires from network crosstalk. Shielded STP cable. STP cable improves the cancellation technique by shielding them in foil or twisting four cables separately and then braiding them all together. In this way, they are effectively shielded from crosstalk and other electrical noise. This keeps a steady signal and reduces overall interference with other devices. Unshielded UTP cable. UTP cable is also a medium composed of wires, but its cancellation effect relies solely on the strength of the twisted pair, not the metallic shielding. Inside a UTP cable are up to four copper wires, all enclosed in a plastic cover. There are five different categories of UTP cables, all of which have varying degrees of strength and modernity: Cat 3, Cat 4, Cat 5, Cat 6, and Cat 7. Cat equals category. Even though STP and UTP both provide a reliable form of connectivity for electronic equipment, they differ in the way they are designed and manufactured. They also perform differently within their own end-to-end system. Different environments have varying levels of noise. Some are in cities, near roads, or positioned next to loud machinery like generators and motors. And this dictates the efficacy of the wires being used. STP cables provide better functionality when used in louder places, while UTP reduces only a little of the problematic electromagnetic interference. That said, STP cabling is more expensive, harder to install, stiffer, and takes up more space. UTP, on the other hand, provides a faster transmission if the noise level is low. Once the existing amount of electromagnetic interference is established, an educated choice can be made on which cabling best serves the architecture. Coaxial cable, coax, is the medium used to transmit video, audio, and other communications with a single copper conductor at the center. It connects your television to the cable provider and is also used to enable a broadband internet connection in a network. Its name relates to the way it carries a signal through a physical channel, both running along the same axis. Like other similar transmitters, it also provides an interference-free transmission for high-frequency electrical signals. Fiber optic cable is a network cable too, but it uses strands of glass fibers in addition to copper ones. This allows it to effectively perform data networking and telecommunications over vast distances. Compared to wired cables, fiber optics offer a high bandwidth and can support much of the world's internet, cable, and phone systems. While fiber optics are lighter, faster, and less prone to interference, they are also fragile and more expensive to install. For many years, experts believed fiber optic cables offered the best form of security. However, there have been recent suggestions that they can be tapped just as easily as copper wires. For this reason, it is important to tighten up the access control to the cabling through increased physical layer security. Because once an intruder has gained access to the cable, the actual tapping process is pretty easy, even on fiber optics.
Did you know that fiber optic cables can transmit data at speeds of over 15 terabits per second? That's 1,000 times faster than the industry average.
Wireless networks. Wireless networks have become increasingly popular over the years as they use high-frequency radio signals, infrared light beams, or lasers to communicate instead of cables. Every workstation on a wireless network has a transceiver or antenna of some kind to send and receive data in the same way a cable would. They do not need to be physically connected. For farther distances, communications can take place through cellular telephone technology or satellite. This medium is particularly useful for connecting personal devices or remote computers to a LAN. Cables or wireless, which is more secure? First, none of these network media types can be considered the best, as they are all useful in different ways. Most networks employ a combination of both cables and wireless in order to maximize their process. When it comes to networking, diversity is a good thing. In the event of a disaster like a flood, fire, or an earthquake, it's smart to have alternatives to rely on for communication. Nonetheless, wireless networks tend to be more vulnerable to cyber attacks and unauthorized use than wired ones. Because the wireless method uses radio waves to transmit data, it is vulnerable to outside parties who may be looking to eavesdrop on communications. Although this information is often hidden in code, it can still be monitored by a third party. The technology is continuing to evolve, and the tools to create an exploit are free and easily downloaded from the internet. As a result, a savvy cybercriminal can gain access to a wireless network and all the private information, passwords, and other sensitive assets it holds. That said, users can access the network from anywhere within range and are never limited by the length of cable or port location. In that way, wired networks offer less convenience but considerably more cybersecurity. But it's important to remember, cables of all kinds can still be breached by piercing the sheath and tapping into the communications. For example, coax cables have no physical transmission security and can be easily tapped without interrupting the transmission or alerting the user. As we continue through this course, you will learn more about wireless networks and how cybersecurity is affected by their use. Network connectivity. To further explore the security aspects of network media, we need to understand a bit more about how networks handle information and how they connect. As we know, networks come in many different shapes and sizes. Some are built for the home, while others are designed to handle crazy amounts of traffic and information. And because networks function differently, not all technologies support the same connections. For example, Ethernet links support media broadcasting, while IPv6 does not. Network connectivity describes the elaborate process of networks linking to one another using a variety of tools and strategies. Let's look at the different types of connection commonly seen on networks today. Broadband. While there are still dial-up internet users accessing the web through the public telephone network, broadband internet is the most popular form of access in most countries. As a high-capacity transmission technique with a lot of frequencies and messaging capabilities, broadband enables users to communicate more readily. It is fast and can be used in a few different ways. Digital Subscriber Line, DSL. DSL connects you to the internet using available telephone wires with no interruption to service. The strength of a DSL connection varies according to your distance from the switching station. Cable. A cable connection is provided by the local cable company and becomes slower when there are too many users connected at the same time. These peak use times usually occur in the evening after work and on weekends. Fiber optic. Fiber optic is the fastest internet connection, higher bandwidth using light, even though it is still a relatively new broadband technology. Satellite. This service is provided by satellite, which makes it the slowest of all the options. It is a practical replacement for dial-up, however, and can be useful to those who live in remote places. Bluetooth. This is a personal area network used for transmitting data among personal devices. If you were a driver with a phone, you likely already know about this technology. It was named after the King of Denmark, Harald Bluetooth, who lived over 1,000 years ago. Because it was designed to support networking of portable technology fueled by batteries, it offers a wireless connection by pairing any number of devices together. Because this process happens through a radio signal, Bluetooth only covers short distances up to about 30 feet. Cellular. This is also a wireless communication network that can reach faraway lands by using a series of cells, each of which has a fixed location transceiver. When these base stations are joined together, they allow a cellular network to cover a wide geographic area with minimal interference. Other network devices. What else do you need to get your network up and running? A hub. Traditionally, the word hub relates to the central part of a wheel or the center of activity. In computing, it means essentially the same thing. A network hub is the central connection point where multiple ports exist and all of the associated data of packets and frames come and go. Because this connection point works at the physical layer of the OSI, it literally links networking devices together with different kinds of twisted pair cabling. Just like a hub, a switch creates connection points on an Ethernet network through twisted pair cabling. But hubs and switches treat the data they receive differently.
While a hub sends data to all the ports on the network, a switch only sends information to the port connected to the destination device.
The more direct action of a switch can enhance the performance of a network. The device that builds connections with other networks is fittingly known as a bridge. It works at the second physical layer of the OSI model and allows different networks to communicate and share information, most typically two LANs looking to form a larger network. A bridge can also segment larger networks into smaller ones by putting itself between two physical networks and breaking up the data flow into smaller sections. A router functions on the third layer of the OSI model and processes logical addressing information. Routers are used to form large, complex networks by connecting dissimilar LANs on the same protocol. This allows them all to work nicely together. When a router receives data, it reads the header of the packet and decides where it should go. It then searches in its routing table to determine how the information can reach its destination and sends the packet on its way. A device called a modem, which can be internal or external, converts computer-generated digital signals into analog waves so they can be successfully transmitted through the telephone or cable lines. The router connects you to the internet and allows for a gateway to connect networks to other, different, incompatible communication protocols, like an access point to a wireless network. As the two main functions of a network, routing and switching are essential to cybersecurity. While switches connect computers within a single network, routers connect entire networks to each other. Routing is what allows computers to link through the internet and pass information between different networking systems. In this way, a router is very similar to a switch. It is just working on a much bigger playing field. And because both routers and switches are the workhorses that send information around networks, they are also the primary targets for hackers who want that information. This is why protecting routers and switches against tampering is so critical to a security protocol. Network security appliances. Because networks are such vast and complex environments, computers are outfitted with many different types of appliances in the form of hardware and software that are designed to provide a specific computing resource. Just as a refrigerator is a home appliance that keeps food cold and fresh, a network security appliance keeps computer networks protected from unwanted traffic through the use of systems and equipment like firewalls, antivirus scanners, content filtering devices, or similar server-related mechanisms. Some of these devices are passive, in that they detect and report unwanted traffic, while others employ more preventative measures. And some take a more active stance, like Unified Threat Management, UTM appliances, which combine several features into one system to create a multifaceted security approach. Cyber defense analyzes different threats to network environments and then devises certain strategies and mechanisms to fight potential threats. There are a wide range of responses involved in cyber defense, including locking up certain areas of the digital landscape, understanding where sensitive data resides, using preventative controls to thwart attackers, or detecting and responding to unauthorized activity. This enhances overall security tactics and gives users the ability to identify the paths and sectors a hacker could target. The evolution of firewall security. Let's spend some time focusing on the king of all security appliances, the firewall. Like most elements of technology, firewalls have experienced a major evolution over the years, and they continue to be one of the most effective fighters of cybercrime. Firewalls were mainly used to intercept traffic on the wire while inspecting the details of each packet to see if they were properly matched. Depending on the results of this analysis, the packet was then dropped or forwarded as intended. But even though this inspection method was quick, it ate up a lot of resources. So these days, firewalls do more than just filter packets. They employ the more sophisticated method of application-level filtering. To understand exactly what this means and how it serves to protect a network, we need to move away from what a firewall does and consider how it does it. First-generation firewalls. These use a form of protection known as static packet filtering, which checks every unit of data entering or leaving a network to see if it meets the required protocols of source and destination IP address and TCP/UDP source and destination port. Any packet without the right credentials is instantly turned away at the door. Second or next generation firewalls. Also known as stateful packet inspection firewalls, these examine the contents of the package rather than just their addresses. In this way, information must now show ID and open its purse for inspection. But once they are cleared, a record is kept of these established users, and they can re-enter more easily in the future. This filter uses smart protocols to enhance the filtering process, handle multiple sessions at once, and control the overall network flow. Third-generation firewalls. The newest of the three, these can be defined as perimeter security combined with sophisticated network components. Unlike the earlier two versions, this system can alert the user in real time about suspicious activity and increase overall security, all without impacting the network performance. This firewall has evolved to meet the major demands of those who need big, big security, like corporate and government networks, because they increase safety while minimizing any impact on network performance. Due to the growing demand for wireless networks and more powerful virus protection, this generation of firewalls is likely to become even more popular, an evolution that could potentially challenge its ability to remain simple, flexible, and secure. Because remember, that is the best form of cybersecurity, tools that are both effective and highly usable. Before choosing a firewall, ask yourself, why do you need a firewall? What is your greatest threat? Which generation of firewall suits your needs? How will the firewall fit into your network topology? How much traffic will it process? Do you need to inspect this before deciding? Would an appliance or a software solution be most suitable for your network? Do you have the right person for the job? What OS is best suited for these requirements? Once you have considered these questions, you can choose one with confidence and move on to configuration. This process is technical in nature, specifically designed for the chosen firewall. It involves identifying the number of switch ports, naming them, setting security levels, establishing protocols, and creating lists of those with access. Diagnostic software. By scanning and searching for network problems, diagnostic software can identify and troubleshoot all sorts of problems, from IP addressing errors to issues with internet connectivity. Through detection and prevention, this type of software can provide useful insight into basic network availability and help users manage their systems more effectively. An intrusion detection system, IDS. Not all watchdogs doze on the front porch and wait for trouble. Some sniff around and alert their owners to the scent of danger. An intrusion detection system is a bit like this in that it monitors fishy activity or policy violations on a network, while a firewall just is. If something questionable happens, an intrusion detection system, IDS, will instantly report it to an administrator or central security system. IDSs come in many forms, from antivirus software to traffic monitors of entire networks, although the most common are network intrusion detection systems, NIDS, and host-based intrusion detection systems, HIDS. Even though both systems recognize troubling patterns, an NIDS focuses more on analyzing incoming traffic, while an HIDS monitors valuable OS files. An IDS is slightly different from a firewall because it's actively scanning for intruders instead of just putting up a boundary. An intrusion prevention system, IPS. An intrusion prevention system, IPS, is a protective approach to network security because it looks for possible threats and responds to them quickly. Like an IDS, it monitors network traffic, but because an exploit can happen in an instant, an IPS is ready to take immediate action. It is poised and ready to follow a strict set of rules designed to block traffic if need be, while still forwarding authorized users so there is no delay in service. To distinguish it within the watchdog analogy, an IPS could be likened to a few giant pit bulls who are not napping or sniffing, but standing alert, trained, and ready to strike. Antivirus software. We hear the word layers a lot in cybersecurity because of the way digital systems must lay on various security methods in order to stay flexible and efficient. And antivirus software is an important component in this layered structure because it works well in conjunction with other safety measures. It is simply impossible to have a safe and functional computer system in today's day and age without adequate antivirus software, which can detect, prevent, and remove malware infections from personal devices, IT systems, and networks. There are two types of antivirus software out there, free and not free. Of course, the more you pay, the more you get. Let's look. Free antivirus software gives you the bare minimum level of protection. It offers automatic scans and perhaps some protection tools like a browser add-on that will search for bad links. That said, they offer no technical support. Only a forum where users can ask each other for help. Paid antivirus software looks different, depending on how much you spend. It can be a basic step up or extremely high end, often known as suites. These fancy versions offer enhanced security tools, think identity theft protection and parental controls, and are typically more flexible than free packages. Although paid product options are always changing, some of the big names in antivirus software with great reviews are Norton, Webroot, Bitdefender, Kaspersky, Avast, Emisoft, and ESET. If you plan to remove malware yourself, it's important to carefully research your choices and pick what's best for you, your system, and your wallet. Updates and backups. Update, update, update. Why do we always have to update our software? Turns out, these updates are not there to annoy you. They actually have value. While you are working on documents, listening to Spotify, or even watching Netflix, your system is always scanning for ways to improve itself and close those ever-present security holes. And once it discovers a vulnerability or potential weakness, it immediately prompts you to update your software in response. Even though hackers can be incredibly clever, automatic software updates are often equally as clever in the way they are predicting and preparing for attacks. So, turn your automatic software update features on and leave them on. These updates and the smart, innovative people who create them are working on the side of technological good, which means these updates are one of the best ways to protect your technology. Update services. If you are wondering how these device updates actually work, it's pretty simple to understand. They rely on a system service that automatically loads as part of an OS or application startup process. These updates are usually small files and will be downloaded as soon as an internet connection is established. Really, this process is more like a check-in to see if your device is current and running at optimal health. These update services can be analyzed and configured in a few ways. Here they are in a nutshell. An enabled service is configured to start when the system boots up. A disabled service is configured not to start when the system boots up. An active service is currently running. An inactive service is currently disabled but could run if made active. The effectiveness of these services will depend greatly on how they are configured to offer protection. Even though automatic features are convenient and helpful, humans also play a big part in cybersecurity. Have you ever lost data on your computer? Virus infection, hard drive failure, bad program installation? It can happen for a number of reasons. Machine breakdown, virus, power outage, fire, flood, human error, and can be an agonizing experience resulting in lost documents and endless hours of wasted work. As a responsible user, you must install specific software to help you regularly back up all the data files on your computer, just in case something goes wrong. The backup process makes duplicate copies of a file, program, or folder in case the original is corrupted or lost. As a result, it can also restore a backed up version of information to its original location. Remember, not all software is installed by you on your computer. Some of it is embedded in your router as firmware and provides network protocols, security, and administrative controls. Although many routers have a built-in update checker, ensuring the security of your router firmware through some oversight will improve connectivity and keep your network safe. Because the process sometimes requires downloading additional software and reading teeny tiny IP addresses and serial numbers from the bottom of physical hardware, it's not always easy, but it is important. Every computer model is slightly different, so keeping firmware updated requires some attention to the specifics of your systems. Network principles. So, we know that securing a network is a critical step in warding off cyber attacks, and we understand how firewalls, routers, switches, and other systems contribute to this safety effort. Yes, installing software and hardware is helpful, but the truth is, it isn't enough. You will also need to implement the right configuration or arrangement of setup of hardware and software to keep it running properly. This is an ongoing process known as network principles, and it has several key administrative aspects to bear in mind. Rules-based management. In case you haven't noticed, computers love rules. In truth, they really can't function without them, which is precisely why managing the rules is so important to controlling network communication. Rule-based security employs all the typical players, like routers, firewalls, and antiviruses, all of which use set rules to either allow or deny the movement of data packets. And when a packet does not match the rules, it is denied by default. Play by the rules or don't play. Firewall rules. The rule system is essential to the firewall, which, as we know, is the part of the network designed to block unauthorized access while still allowing outward communication. Just remember, firewalls rely implicitly on rules to manage their decisions about what passes through the virtual barrier. The principle here is simple. If any data packet is not denied or explicitly allowed by any other rule system, the firewall rules always block that packet by default. Because the firewall is so inflexible in its assessment, it is important to review all rules carefully before putting them into action. Otherwise, you may find some useful data packets are not making it through. VLAN management. This network security measure uses hardware to segregate the LAN with the help of switches, thus earning the name Virtual Local Area Network, VLAN. Every port is assigned a VLAN by default, which can only be changed by the network administrator. The goal of a VLAN is to manage traffic, enhance performance, and improve security on the network, which it does through the use of a router or a specialized component known as a multi-layer switch. The VLAN should be designed to permit necessary data packets while turning away the undesirables. As a subnetwork, a VLAN can group together devices from different physical LANs and make traffic easier to manage, thereby improving the overall performance of a busy network. Even more, it enhances security on larger networks by giving the user more control over which devices have local access to one another. Yes, they add security. However, VLANs are not a replacement for firewalls. Secure router configuration. To prevent unauthorized or malicious changes to the router, its configuration must be well secured using these best practices.
Password.
Create a top-secret password for router access.
Encryption.
Encrypt data and secure authentication protocols.
Secure protocols.
Configure management interfaces using secure protocols.
Trusted networks. Pre-configure IP addresses of trusted networks before exchanging packets.
Another best practice is the configuration denying every Type 5 redirect message of Internet Control Message Protocol, ICMP, which is the protocol that sends error messages and other operational information indicating issues like unavailable service or an unreachable router. Access Control List, ACL. Used mostly in firewalls, switches, and routers, the ACL defines whether a particular function in both access objects and communications is allowed to execute. Its rules state that data packets are allowed through as an exception and denied by default. Port security. This network security feature enables administrators to configure switch ports in ways that allow only some specific sources to have access. This prevents unwanted parties from gaining access, which is possible when ports are left open. As a result, unused ports are blocked or locked and disconnected from the main workstation. The various methods used to achieve this form of network security are based on the type of port being addressed. Flood guards. This preventative security mechanism can be implemented as a standalone device or as part of an existing firewall. It is capable of monitoring network traffic to identify attacks that use packet flooding to achieve their criminal goal. When a router floods a network, it sends many data packets around to different nodes as a way to distribute information updates quickly. This is also an effective way for a hacker to overwhelm network devices with a flood of unnecessary packets. But flood guards are equipped to handle this malicious activity by simply blocking the flood, thereby stopping the attack before it even happens. Loop protection. When a transmission pathway is repeated on the network, it is called a loop. This type of protection uses certain protocols to prevent ports from moving into a forwarding state, which might open up a loop in the network. If this happens, multicast traffic accumulates on the network, and this broadcast storm consumes network resources like bandwidth, disrupting services and messing up the flow of normal traffic. And because this loop is repetitive in nature, its predictability can be taken advantage of by hackers looking to initiate an attack. Implicit deny. As the name implies, the implicit deny stance treats as suspicious anything on the network that does not have specific and selective permission. This means networks using this system only allow certain IP addresses and/or service ports while blocking all others. Network separation. Sometimes known as network segmentation, this approach splits a computer network into smaller ones to boost performance, reduce congestion, and enhance security. When a cyber attacker gains unauthorized access to a network, the zones created by segmentation can limit their movement and shut down their mission. Log analysis. By reviewing the log files, audit trails, and other records, log analysis can identify policy violations, malicious events, and related issues. A log analysis can be completed automatically using various engines. However, it should also be manually analyzed occasionally to detect patterns and review automation practices. Unified threat management. This all-in-one security hardware is specifically designed to work between the internet and private networks. It filters inbound and outbound network traffic, almost like a firewall, but it lacks some specialization and performance features needed for multiple security functions, which make it a better and less expensive option for smaller businesses. Designing for security. Think about a computer trying to connect to a network. Before it can enter the technology dance party on the other side, it has to identify itself as a trustworthy participant. The computer must have the proper system updates, configurations, and antivirus protection before it is allowed entrance. The bouncer is checking its ID, if you will, and making sure it is wearing the proper party outfit. While a pre-installed software is running this background check, the computer cannot see the actual network activity, just like the partygoer must be cleared by the bouncer before they can actually see what's happening inside the club. Only after certain policies are met and the computer is cleared can it begin to socialize with other devices, just like the partygoer has to wait for their ID to be verified before they can start schmoozing. This keeps the whole network landscape free from problems, potential threats, and sickness, and the dance club free from party crashers. Because home and business networks have different levels of traffic and danger, they often require a unique security approach. In a home network, likely a LAN, a router is serving as the firewall, filtering the comings and goings of online visitors. On a busier network, a larger firewall is likely in use. Safe zones. A demilitarized zone, DMZ, is a special configuration designed to improve security in home and business settings through isolating computer connections on either side of a firewall. The term comes from the military concept of a neutral zone separating two warring parties, an analogy for the zone between the general public of potential hackers and an internal network. DMZ designs come in different shapes and sizes. Though they essentially serve the same purpose, they achieve their goal in different ways. By creating a subnetwork to separate a LAN from an untrusted network like the Internet, a DMZ guards the border of a system and keeps the internal structure safe. But because a DMZ's network ports must remain open to the Internet, it can be at risk to external attacks, even if all security mechanisms are current and valid. The modern goal of a DMZ is to streamline the process of requests on either side of the firewall, ensuring only legitimate session data can pass through to the network. Here are tips on how to keep a DMZ secure. Preserve isolation as much as possible. This means keeping the rules monitoring traffic between the DMZ and a network as tight as possible. Practice good vulnerability management. This means taking extra steps to ensure your DMZ server is fully patched to deal with the latest and greatest exploits. Use application layer defenses for exposed services. This means you should choose a network firewall that has more than just a port filter. It should have the ability to inspect, identify, and block certain traffic. Monitor, monitor, monitor. This means keeping your eyes open and focused on the security of your system through detection devices, incident reports, and signs of attack. For the purpose of both economy and security, a network device, usually a router, can use a process called Network Address Translation, NAT, to assign a public address to one or more computers inside a private network. This limits the number of public IP addresses of a company, especially if the computers only need to access resources inside the network, like printers or file servers. Remember, IP addresses can give a hacker information, and they should always be minimized and protected as much as possible. Routers have no trouble moving traffic between private addresses, but when trying to access online resources, they need a public address in order to properly send and receive requests. An NAT allows this to happen. Similarly, air gap networking seeks to keep a system secure by physically isolating it from all unsecured networks, such as the Internet or a LAN. In this way, there is a figurative air gap, much like a medieval moat around a castle protecting the network, which provides security but does not allow computers on the outside to communicate in any way. Network defense. While many experts agree NAT and perimeter-focused security approaches can be effective, they are likely not enough to protect the blended networks of the future. This original model of creating a hard shell of security around a GUI center of valuable data will soon be threatened by the changing ways people handle their information and the way it is transmitted. The more populated an area becomes, the more its boundaries are muddled. This stands true for network defense as well. As a result, security may need to be set up at every level of a busy network, not just around the very outside. Because weaknesses can be exploited at the network, OS, application, and data levels, it stands to reason each of those fields needs their own security zones, or areas with increased trust, accountability, and safety. This type of precise and dynamic protection can contain infection, keeping it from reaching deeper levels, regulate compliance requirements, prevent malware from running rampant, and deal with persistent threats more creatively. Granted, security zones can lead to some degree of isolation, but there's no denying their structure is more effective at establishing layers of trust. The intranet and extranet. As you may recall, the intranet is a private network accessible only to the people who populate it, like the employees of an organization. Typically established on a LAN or WAN, the intranet includes a wide range of information and services from the company's IT systems otherwise not available on the internet. In this way, it can create a valuable platform for internal communication and collaboration, along with creating a shared starting point for accessing internal and external resources. In addition to convenience, the intranet protects organizations from unauthorized intruders by limiting its use to a set group of users. Aside from the company's workers, who can also have varying levels of access, no one from the outside is able to access sensitive data or communications. It creates a safe space where insiders can trust all documents and information because they are generated and transmitted within a contained and secure network. An extension of the intranet that allows companies to share some information and communications with the outside world of vendors, partners, and customers is known as the extranet. Security and privacy can be afforded to this system through firewalls, message encryption, user authentication, and the use of a virtual private network, VPN, that can tunnel through the public network. This tunneling protocol allows for data from a private network to travel across a public network in a safe, compressed way. The process of tunneling lets traveling information appear public in nature when, in fact, it is only looking to pass through the landscape in a private, undetected way.
Knowledge check. Test your knowledge of new information by answering these questions and then review the feedback. Question 1. A new startup company has just rented space in a large office complex. There are thousands of devices already in the office, and the building is located next to a manufacturing plant. The startup has a decent amount of money to set up their tech equipment. Which type of cabling would be best for their network connections? STP, shielded twisted pair. STP cabling functions well in places with many devices and machines. Even though it is more expensive than UTP, it is the best choice for the startup considering their noisy environment. UTP, unshielded twisted pair. UTP cabling will not reduce enough of the noise, electromagnetic interference, from the other devices in the building and next door. Consider a type of cable that reduces more noise. DSL. DSL is not itself a type of cable. It uses telephone wires, which are probably STP or UTP, to provide an internet connection. Wireless. Ultimately, a network needs to have wires somewhere. A wireless network only works if the router or access point is plugged into a physical cable. Question 2. Which of the following would be best suited for finding an operating system file that has been compromised by a hacker? Network Intrusion Detection System, NIDS. NIDS focuses primarily on analyzing incoming traffic. Consider an option that monitors existing files. Firewall. A firewall is meant to prevent hackers and acts as a boundary. It does not actively check for existing threats or files that have been compromised. Host-based intrusion detection system, HIDS. An HIDS focuses on actively monitoring the host files for signs of hackers or files that have been compromised. Firmware. Firmware refers to the software that is permanently programmed onto a device such as a router. It does not focus on scanning a network or host for threats. Question 3. Marcus is a network administrator looking for a way to enhance his network's performance, improve security, and spread traffic out more evenly. Which of the following would be the best option for Marcus? Firewall. A firewall is designed to prevent unauthorized network access. It does not primarily focus on managing traffic or enhancing network performance. Access Control List, ACL. An ACL is used in firewalls, switches, and routers to determine which data packets are allowed through and which ones are denied. While it provides security, it does not help manage traffic across a network or increase performance. Router. A router is a network device that forwards packets between nodes on a network. Although most routers contain a firewall and some security protocols, they are not normally used to manage traffic and improve a network's performance. VLAN. A VLAN is used to separate and group different parts of a LAN, which allows for easier management of traffic and security. It can also boost performance since traffic can be spread out. Question 4. Which of the following statements is false? Network address translation is used to assign public addresses to computers inside a private network. This is a true statement. NAT can be used to keep computers inside a private network secure by hiding, reducing, and protecting their IP addresses. IP addresses should be protected and hidden as much as possible. This is a true statement. IP addresses contain information that a hacker could use to exploit data packets, so they should be hidden if possible. An air gap network is isolated from all unsecured networks. This is a true statement. To air gap a network means to isolate it from other unsecured networks, such as the internet or an unsecured LAN. The network cannot communicate with computers outside the air gapped network. A router can only move data packets between private IP addresses. A router can move data packets between computers with private or public IP addresses. Conclusion. It's clear the challenges of cybersecurity are twofold. Not only do we need to fully understand the hardware, software, and virtual components involved, but we also need to draw inspiration from our ability to be clever, creative, and thoughtful in our solutions. Although locking a door is helpful, effective security involves something far more thorough. It demands a vast understanding of the virtual territory, a familiarity with those who would threaten it, and an unwavering dedication to the overall integrity of our online world.